All right. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm Sujay Sharma. I'm the CEO of BP Pulse Americas, and that's BP's EV charging business here in the U.S. Thanks for joining us for this session on the future of fueling, deploying an EV fast charging network across the U.S. I'm joined here by some wonderful partners of ours from different business areas. I'm just going to pass it over to them in a second here to introduce themselves. Camille and I will be working today. Camille from Uber is sitting at the end there, and I will be working to facilitate the session and look forward to engaging with you in the conversation. With that said, Carrie, maybe I'll pass it over to you to introduce yourself.
Well, thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm Carrie Birdsall. I'm the VP of EV Strategy for Hertz. Thank you for having me today. Very excited to be sharing the stage with all my wonderful partners up here. I actually started with Hertz 17 years ago in operations, always in operations, working with the frontline staff. And most recently, in December, I had the opportunity to run our EV strategy segment of the business. And it's been extremely exciting. I've been fortunate to be able to continue our industry-leading efforts in electrification, really focused around the EV transition and what we're here to talk about today regarding the infrastructure and driver education and really getting people moving in the right direction to assist in moving us forward. So thanks, guys.
I think, Camille, you're next.
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Camille Irving. I am the Vice President of Operations at Uber and General Manager for Uber's North America Rides business. I've been at Uber for going on 6 years, and I'm responsible for taking this piece of Uber's flagship rides business in the U.S. and continuing to grow it profitably. That also includes a key role in our electrification efforts. We see us as a really important role in driving, especially electric vehicle adoption, because rideshare drivers are switching to EVs at about 7 times the pace of the general market. And it is an incredible effort for us and win for both drivers, riders, and the cities that we partner with to continue to help lead transitioning into this electric vehicle space.
All right, and lucky last. I'm Debbie Boffa. I'm the CEO of Travel Centers America. Who are Travel Centers of America? We are a full-service travel center operator. We are located in 44 states across the U.S. on highway locations. We have the brands TA, or Travel Centers. We have Petro, and we have TA Express. We joined the BP family in May of last year. We were acquired by BP. It comes together now, doesn't it?
I know, fun facts.
Yeah. So we have over 300 locations with 19,000 team members servicing professional drivers as well as motorists. We have over 450 restaurants. We have truck maintenance and emergency roadside assistance squads as well as amenities that any driver might need: laundry facilities, showers, restrooms. We have gyms. You can even go to a chapel on a Sunday at our locations. So anyway, that's us. So really looking forward to today, and thank you, Sujay, for the invitation.
Thanks, Debbie. So if you need a shower, look up Debbie after this.
I was just saying to Lexi beforehand, we help keep America clean. We do 16,000 showers a day.
There you go.
There you go.
And I'm Sujay Sharma. As I said, I'm the CEO of BP Pulse Americas. And what's BP Pulse? BP Pulse is BP's global EV charging brand. We'll talk a little bit more about it over the course of this conversation. But we have over 29,000 charge points globally. We've made a big commitment to invest into the U.S. EV charging infrastructure. As of earlier this year, we announced we were going to invest $500 million in the next, well, this year and next year to add 3,000 charge points. Prior to this, I ran BP's EV charging business in the Asia-Pacific region, which included India, China, Australia, and New Zealand. So it's interesting to bring all of that experience back to the U.S. and learn from that and hopefully create a great customer experience here.
Sujay, it's really awesome to have your leadership. So thank you for pulling this panel together. So the four of us are going to have a brief conversation about the state of charging infrastructure, especially focus on the U.S. And then we'll leave some time at the end if the folks in the audience have questions. So to kick us off, we have a lot of key players in the transportation space on this stage right now. And I would love to start with a bit of why are we here? So for each of you, if you could speak to why your company is playing in this space and to share some background on your ambitions to transition to our all-electric future. Debbie, why don't you go first? I'm very curious about Travel Center's ambitions.
Yeah, no problem at all. So as I mentioned, we've got a large on-highway network here in the US, and these are locations that are destination spots for any type of traveler on the road. Whether you're taking a long trip, you're a professional driver, or even if you're just coming out and you want to go to a restaurant, we are a destination point for drivers and communities. Our sites are very uniquely located to help assist with range anxiety when it comes to EV. But because these are large sites, 25 acres, we have a large number of restaurants. So we provide extensive services and options for people while they are at our location. So we can provide convenience. You can get a coffee, you can get something to eat, you can rest and refuel. These large sites will also continue to enable those that need gasoline and diesel because we recognise it's a transition, but what we're doing is we're providing an end solution for those as they want to transition their mobility needs. When it comes to fleet, so we are traditionally a large fleet provider, so large, heavy, medium-duty truck fleets will come to our locations. As I mentioned, we'll continue to offer diesel for those drivers as well as truck maintenance services. I mean, an EV truck will need maintenance as well, and we're fast training up our techs to be able to do that too. But we're also turning our mind to other zero emission energy vectors that those drivers might need too, and we will be your one-stop shop for all of those things. In terms of what we're doing quite locally here in Southern California, we're about to break ground on our very first medium heavy duty truck charging, public truck charging facility that's in Ontario. We're very excited about that location, so we're doing it in partnership with the California Energy Commission. It's going to have 300-400 kilowatt charges. That will go live in December, so we're about to break ground. That one will be up and running. And then in the middle of next year, we'll put a 1-megawatt charger in. We're also building it future-proof with additional lanes that we can add later once we start to see that real pickup in vehicles coming in. We're actually going to help power that facility. We're putting in some solar panels and a microgrid with battery storage. So it's a great... We see it as a great opportunity. We've got some current fleet partners who are starting to use EV trucks outside of their local operational area, so we can help them with that range anxiety, that last charge they need to get back to their depot, provide them all those additional services. But selfishly, we can really start to learn what is it that those folks need? How do the operations change from a traditional internal combustion engine to that of a zero emission engine and how those drivers are using them? And it will change our operations and the services we provide. So we're really looking forward to that. And the other thing that's super exciting is that now I have my new best friend, BP Pulse. I get to leverage all of the fantastic technology and thinking that they have already been doing around how you can further help behind the fence with those fleet operators, which makes that adoption so much easier. And the digital platforms are mind-blowing that these folks have. So we're very excited about the future of EV and our role that we can play in that.
Awesome. I mean, the transition of trucking into EVs is really important for the impact that electrification will make just because of the sheer number of miles. And so the fact that you're starting there, I think, is going to maximize impact. And to your point, the trial in Ontario will cause learnings that can help everyone scale later on. Carrie, tell us a bit about what's happening at Hertz.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, the mobility landscape is obviously changing in our 100-plus-year-old company. You know, I think this is the most meaningful and dramatic change that we've seen from traditional rental car. And, you know, we are really, really focused on kind of not just transitioning into the EV space, but sticking to our truth, right, in our true north. And that is providing the customer with options and opportunities, providing them with choice, right? We want to diversify the fleet, whether you're going to Orlando and you've got a family of six in a minivan, or, you know, your pickup truck is in the shop and you need to get repaired there, or you're traveling for business or, you know, vacation and you'd like an EV product. We want to be that provider for everybody. And moving into the EV space is certainly something that is exciting, and it comes with unique and different challenges that being a first mover in the space, we've gotten to experience so many different learnings, and we're excited to continue to move forward with that. We are completely focused this year on really honing in on our education, our EV driver education. We've done a lot in that space, from the EV content hubs that we have and the how-to videos and the trip planning and things like that. And we've also focused in then on the charging infrastructure, because we know how important that is to the EV adoption. Building out not only our own internal charging infrastructure, but also the public facing infrastructure is what is really going to lead to that adoption moving forward. And then, of course, working with cities across the country, you know, Orlando, New York City, Denver, Houston, and my home city of Atlanta, we've partnered with these folks in trying to move the transition forward and really focusing on the environmental and economic benefits that electrification provides for the cities through different training platforms with the local high schools and the tech schools, providing them, donating EV cars so that their students can learn how to work on these, because those are the same people that are going to be in our maintenance bays working on the vehicles moving forward. So we're very excited. A lot to do this year.
So much happening. So at Uber, sustainability is absolutely critical. In the US and Canada, there are 35 million trips every single week. So just the sheer number of miles that we're responsible for puts us in a position where it's imperative that we lead the EV transition. So we want to be the cleanest platform on earth, not just because it's the right thing to do for the cities that we partner with and for riders and for drivers, but people actually quite like electric vehicles. And so it works out well for us to continue that along that line. So to that end, I've actually invested $800 million this year to support the EV transition. And that comes in the form of tech investments, incentives for earners, and partnerships with some of the folks who are represented on this stage, because we want to reduce all of the main barriers to drivers going electric. So that is our primary platform here, is to just continue that leadership space, because we're in a position to impact so many miles.
Yeah, and from a BP perspective as well, we've really, you know, as a traditional so-called oil and gas company, we have been thinking about what our strategy needs to look like sort of going forward. And in 2020, we made the clear shift to get behind, you know, alternative energies. And one of them is electrification for us. We today have a franchise, as I said, of close to 30,000 charge points across the globe. And we are working our way towards 100,000 charge points by 2030. And we are focused on, you know, back to the point a number of the folks here made, we are focused on providing convenient solutions. So we are focused on ultra-fast charging, where you can be in and out as quickly as possible. We see that consumers want that. We are now operational in about 10 countries, and we've seen that in country after country, that people want fast, convenient, reliable charging. They don't want slow, inconvenient, unreliable charging, right? And it's easy to say that. It is difficult to achieve it, but learning from 10 different countries now, we are hoping to bring that to the U.S. and change that narrative a little bit for the U.S., working with partners like Uber and Hertz to make that happen and create a better ecosystem for drivers. It's going to be critical to the success. All right. Well, the next topic is we'll talk a little bit about drivers and EV adoption. You know, there were 3.3 million EVs on U.S. roads in 2022. It tells me here, according to the Alliance of Automotive Innovation, but it is fact. So with the amount of EVs projected to increase, I mean, what do you see as the future of fueling and what does the EV transition mean for the way we drive and the way we approach our journeys? I'll start with yourselves, Camille. Share your thoughts, please, from an Uber perspective.
Yeah, totally. So it means a lot. I think for our drivers, it means a bit of a few fundamental shifts in how they operate their businesses. So of that 3.3 million, about 120,000 every week are Uber drivers that are on the road in electric vehicles. And it feels like all 120,000 of them give me direct feedback on their experience. And there's a couple of barriers that they encounter both when trying to transition and have a successful business driving an electric vehicle. So the first one is the upfront cost associated with them. Electric vehicles hit the U.S. market at scale at a premium price point, which for a bunch of reasons was perhaps the right thing for the industry. Now we're starting to see those price points come down, which is really critical because for an Uber driver, their profitability is the number one concern. So we have partnerships with Tesla and Hertz and several other OEMs and fleet providers that allow that cost to become a lot more accessible. And we are willing to subsidize that just to accelerate the transition. The other big concern that drivers have is charging anxiety and range anxiety. And so having partnerships with private companies, but also the city governments to ensure that we have charging infrastructure, not just out at the airport, not just in the suburban hubs, but in urban cores is going to be critical. And what we're bringing to the table to help support that are tech features like having a charging map in the driving app. We have this really cool feature called charging aware matching, where if it looks like your battery is getting low in your car, we make sure that one of your next matches is going to put you in the direction of a charger. And that type of innovation really helps to reduce the barriers to not just going electric, but having a successful business as an electric vehicle Uber driver.
Yeah, there's some pretty cool tech involved in this. I mean, if you're a techie, it's pretty cool to see the evolution of this business. Kerry, what about from your perspective? I mean, obviously, Hertz has taken a leadership position in this space. You said you've learned a lot. What's your thoughts around?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, the leadership position that we took, we probably did not realize how much teaching we would actually have to do. And for me, being in the front lines when we started rolling this out, I'm standing there with our staff and really working with customers and watching them look at you and go, so is this an electric vehicle or is this one? You know, it was very, very basic at first. I think that the education that we started with and what we put in place on the EV content hub and our very own general manager in Newark, New Jersey was on videos, you know, doing here's how you open the door, here's how you turn on the wipers, you know. We taught everything about the vehicle and then moving forward with the charge trip planner, right? You plug in where you start, you plug in where you're going, and it does everything else for you. You don't have to think about it, right? And really explaining that to the customers. So the education piece is just extremely, extremely important on this. And then, you know, once we solve some of the education gaps, then we move forward with the charge anxiety, right? We need to ensure that we are not just investing in our own infrastructure, partnering with my good friend over here and making sure that we can get that public infrastructure out there so that people feel comfortable. You know, the transition for a customer to EV is all about removing the barriers and making people feel comfortable with the decision that they've made. If you're going into a new city and picking up a car at an airport, you want to know that you're going to get from point A to point B, and you don't want to have to worry about it. As humans, we always take the path of least resistance, right? And I don't think that this is any different. We need to remove those barriers. We need to make it easier for our customers to feel comfortable and to feel confident driving an EV. So everything that we're doing to lead in this space is around educating them, is about giving them choice and options, and of course building out that infrastructure to support them.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, I think the one thing the industry is just about taking off, isn't it? I mean, it's probably 4 or 5 years in. So there's a lot of building to be done. I think we all realize that too, make sure that network shows, those networks show up in the right place. Debbie, your thoughts on this?
Yeah. So the role we're playing in helping adopters with that transition to EV. So I mentioned about the heavy duty facility that we're doing in Ontario, but on the consumer side, this year we are installing and will be commissioning another 20 locations which will have consumer-friendly EV charging. We've very deliberately will be doing everything under the BP Pulse banner, because we recognise that consumers or drivers of EV vehicles, it's not about that individual, it's the network. It's knowing, it's all these pieces that colleagues here have been talking about, helping people plan and understand how they can use their vehicle and the way in which they're very used to using an ICE vehicle today. So that's our big thing, is thinking through how can we be part of a bigger system and not just a one-off piece, so that we can help people get comfortable with the total ecosystem as you move into being an EV driver. And then, as I mentioned earlier, it's also around what do people do when they are charging. So we need to make sure all of our team members at our locations are very well skilled on how you use the equipment and how you use the digital interfaces on those. So we're going to be doing a lot around training and education. The big pet peeve I hear about right now when I talk to people who drive EVs is that they turn up and they're not working. The chargers look on the app like they're working, but they're not. There's something wrong with them, or there's a huge queue of people. So we're really going to focus on that interface piece. So how do we make it more effortless for people? How do we make sure that the apps say the right thing? How do I give the right information to Sujay and his team so that they can help us all be successful under the BP Pulse banner? And then how do I make sure you have a great experience when you're at our sites? So continuing to invest in those other things that you might need. Wonderfully clean restrooms, lots of food and beverage options, other things that you can do. So we're also really interested in how people are going to spend that. Is it 20 minutes? Will it get down to more of a 5 minute? How do we then need to listen and modify our offers to match that? So
as an EV driver, I can endorse that. It's a tough, tough experience when it's broken. But I know that if anybody can solve reliable, consistent, fast, it's going to be this partnership right here. Making it happen.
No pressure. Excellent. So let's talk a little bit more about access to charging infrastructure. So according to another office, long name here, so I won't read it. But the access to charging ports has nearly doubled between 2019 and 2023, from 87,000 to 162,000 charge points. This question is for you guys, especially from a consumer perspective and or a rideshare perspective. Where are you seeing that consumers and rideshare drivers and want their charging, and how do they want their charging? What are you picking up from the market?
I'm really glad you asked this question. So on the one hand, we have seen a doubling this year, which I think allows for a bend in the curve of people who will find EVs more accessible. But for the next wave of infrastructure, it's really important that we focus on urban centers. So there's this language that has developed, charging deserts. And if you're not familiar, a charging desert is simply a geography where there's not a lot of access to charging infrastructure. And like many deserts, that ends up being in urban cores. Because, the first wave sort of focuses on, as I mentioned, EVs started to scale at a premium price point. So the first wave of charging was in neighborhoods for people who could afford that premium price point. So it's really important to me and to us at Uber that we are able to bring access to charging into those urban centers, into those historically underserved communities, and Once we do that, I think we'll really unlock accessibility for a very large swath of people, and that's going to accelerate the transition. The last thing I'll say is that in order to make sure that the charging infrastructure goes into the neighborhoods that need it most, we're partnering, obviously, with the folks on this stage, but the next set of players that are going to be critical are city governments that can come through with funding, that can come through with the types of regulation and policy that continue to make this infrastructure happen in the neighborhoods that need it most.
Yeah, so for us, I think, you know, obviously partnering with yourself to put the Giga Hubs around our airport facilities is going to be, you know, huge for us. We need that infrastructure around the airports, around where we're seeing a large number of our renters using it. But also through our Hertz Electrifies program, we're working with the cities to actually share our insights from our telematics in the vehicles, so our cars are connected, and we're working with them to kind of give the insight on where are these vehicles, where are they sitting for an extended period of time, where are they dwelling, you know, where are all of our rideshare drivers, you know, making their trips throughout the day. So then the city can use those insights and turn around and provide, you know, better direction and better forward thinking as to where they're going to start placing their hubs. So I think we're using a combination of just knowing exactly what we need in our major airports, which is a no-brainer, and then also using, you know, telematics and different data information that we have on our vehicles to know where they're moving.
Yeah. I mean, Camille, you make an interesting point around policy. You know, and one of the big pain points for us all probably as an industry is getting the right permitting to put the charging infrastructure in and getting access to the power from the utilities. And just as a data point, you know, if you look in China, where there are now certain cities which have, you know, 50% penetration of EVs, et cetera, if you want to put a high voltage charging location in there, it takes 3 months. 3 months end to end, including getting the right permits, getting the access to the power, and getting the asset on the ground. By comparison, you know, in the US, it can take anywhere from 18 to 24 months. So definitely, I think sorting out that policy bit, if we've got to build faster and make charging more accessible, is gonna have to be sorted out with all of these city and the federal governments, for sure. So as far as existing charging that is available, how do EV drivers find it on your platform? So you've talked a little bit about that, but maybe you can touch on it some more.
Yeah, totally. So I'll reiterate, one of the coolest features that we've been able to launch is a charging map inside of the driver app. So that just puts all of the information at their fingertips. And the great thing is they are able to get access to all charging available across many brands, you know, not just the brand that's kind of right in front of them, which makes it a no-brainer. We also, as I mentioned, have activated this battery-aware matching, where when it seems like your battery is going to be lower, and because our vehicles are connected, we have access to that information, we ensure that an upcoming match is going to put you in the direction of a charger. And so having that data aggregated is hugely beneficial for us, for the innovations that we put on board. But I think to Sujay's point, we can only go so far if we don't have the partnership from the cities and infrastructure. So to that end, Sujay, I'd like to talk a bit about BP Pulse. You have 29,000 charging points globally, which is a huge triumph. But I imagine many people are sitting here saying, 29,000 charge points? I haven't seen any of them. Most of them are outside of the U.S. So you're now starting to turn your attention to the U.S., where, as you mentioned, the development cycles are a little bit longer. What's going to be your strategy in try to speed up that cycle?
Yeah, no, thanks for that question. And you know, as I said, we've just, I think in the last year, we've started to now expand in the U.S. because the U.S. is going to be such a large market for, you know, it's going to be the second largest market after China. And by 2030, we are projecting, according to our internal BP projections, about 30 to 35 million passenger car EVs on the roads across the U.S. And so we are in those 12 to 24 months of that build out, which is why you've probably not seen a lot of charge points yet. But you're going to start seeing them very soon across the large cities across the U.S. And We have a number of different channels to which we are expanding. We have about 8,000 BP, Amoco, Thorntons, sort of branded sites between our own company-owned sites and partner marketeer sites across the U.S. that we are working with to put charging in at the right locations, and obviously in a prioritized manner because certain markets have greater EV density to start off with and then building out sort of from there. We are working with partners like Hertz to put Giga Hubs, as Kerry referred to them, which are these large 30 to 40 parking stall charging operations close to airports. We are also doing that in city centers with other partners, so we are hoping to take care of your charging desert problems in some of the cities. And then we are collaborating with our Travel Centers of America partners here to get that density out onto the highways as well, and I'll let Debbie talk a little bit about that. But that's the way we are thinking about it, is you need densification through the retail, what we call retail forecourts, the gas stations. You need scale through the Giga Hub sort of concept, because drivers need confidence that there'll be enough chargers available, and you need spread so that you can get from New York to San Francisco if you really want to do that. So, but over to you, Debbie, to maybe talk a little bit about the highway bits.
Yeah. So you're probably picking up on a theme that for BP globally, EV and alternative forms of mobility is a large strategy of ours. So there's five big transition growth engines, one being EV, the other being convenience. The acquisition of Travel Centers of America and bringing Travel Centers of America with BP Pulse together is really showing how we're leveraging two of those key planks. So yes, we are very proud to be the location of a number of the charge points that Sujay's just mentioned for the US. So I said earlier, we've got 20 locations this year. We've got another 40 next year. We've got plans for even more after that. We're really prioritising those main corridors, predominantly for motorists in the right locations based on density and where we see people travelling. And then our follow will be with the medium and heavy duty. Again, in those states and corridors that align closely with what's going on locally, and then also aligned to, well, we had the announcement earlier this week from the Biden administration around the strategy for zero emission trucks. So we're digging into that one, and I'm pleased to say that all of those corridors and the hubs that they've identified as part of that strategy, we have TA locations. I think 96% of our locations fall within 100 miles of all of that, either directly on it or within the hubs. So it's a very exciting time bringing together the opportunity around how we can help the US transportation industry, whether it's motorists, mum and dads in their four-wheel vehicles, Uber drivers helping with road share, people on trips hiring Hertz vehicles, right through to professional drivers, how we can help with that decarbonised journey, provide the digital solutions, the network, and then the convenience offerings that they can take advantage of and value their time while they're waiting for that charge to complete.
Yeah, and I think, again, with to the point I think Camille was making earlier around range anxiety, you know, if you've got to undertake a highway trip, you want to have sites available across the highways. We'll talk a little bit about... Sorry, do you have a question?
Oh, yeah. Is it okay to start queuing up?
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
So recently, Hertz announced that they're in the process of selling off tens of thousands, like 20,000 Teslas. What is your EV strategy going forward? Are you just focusing on different car makers? Can you give us a sense of what the road ahead is on your EV acquisition strategy?
Sure. Yes, we made the...
And by the way, I'm sorry. I'm Martine Paris, and I'm a BBC Features correspondent that just wrote an article on the Uber-Hertz partnership with Tesla, and I've just interviewed your Chief Sustainability Officer, Thibault. So that's where I'm coming from.
Sure.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. And appreciate your question. So yes, we made the decisive action to right-size the fleet, right? We made a decision to take a look at where our natural demand was lying, look at the size of the fleet, EV fleet specifically that we had, and we made a decision to right-size that. The decision was mainly surrounding disposing of a group of assets, which we typically do in the course of our business anyway. We buy and sell vehicles every single day, right? But we disposed of these units mainly because today, currently, right, they were not giving us the return on our capital investment that we were seeking out of them. So that was a decision that we made to really right-size where we felt like we needed to be at that point. We're committed to our EV strategy. We're committed to being a first mover in this space. It's something that we feel passionately about, obviously, with all the partnerships that we've entered into, and we will continue to move forward with that. We are selling units that naturally don't meet the demand, right? But it's not just Tesla. There's other units included in that, and we've also purchased other EV units.
I was just going to say, what's your purchase strategy at this point? Are you looking for next-gen models, or like, what are you focusing on going forward?
Yeah, I think we actually had a conversation right before this talking about SUVs in the EV space and what that's going to look like and how that's going to help the Uber platform for their, you know, black model vehicles and things like that. So I just drove a Chevy Silverado the other day and was excited to be able to charge somebody else on the side of the road with the thing because it's so powerful. So, I mean, we're, you know, like I said, the Silverados are now in the fleet and we're continuing. We just got a group of new Kia products and all sorts of things. You know, we are committed to choice. Right, and we want to make sure that we're giving our customers choice, and that includes a wide range of EV products as well as ICE products. And we'll continue to work with the OEMs to seek out some of the best options out there, and we'll listen to our partners and what they're asking us for as well.
Okay, that's exciting. I actually did just write an article on the EV SUVs that are coming to market. I'm happy to hear you're adding those to your fleet. I have a question for BP and Travel Centers
if
of America.
Yeah, if I could just quickly add to the point that Carrie made. From a perspective of a big customer of, you know, and partner with Hertz before our drivers, it was actually really great to see the rebalancing of the Hertz EV portfolio so that we could mix in more vehicles that are at a more affordable price point for the drivers. So we saw that actually as a really smart move because, again, we're able to give drivers choice. They can choose sort of the higher price point Tesla, or they have a whole set of options that are at more affordable price points that are great electric vehicles that allow them to continue to be electrified, give great rides, et cetera. So I just want to, you know, add a shout out to Carrie that the that transition is really helpful across all stakeholder groups.
And for anybody looking for a used EV, Hertz has on its website $19,000 used EVs that some, I think you can get up to a federal tax, federal credit of $4,000 off of. So I don't know, something like that.
I know,
but I
did
write an article.
I did look at them as well. So
are you in the, are you in the market?
Why not?
That's pretty
exciting. I know a car sales location. I'll send you some.
But I do have a question for BP and Travel Centers of America. You have 7,000 gas stations in America, I think, something like that. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, over 7,000 branded stations, yeah. Some of those are owned by us, and some of those are owned by our marketing partners, dealers, jobbers.
Okay, great. Are you planning to add EV charging stations to your existing gas station locations? And for the stations that you... charging stations that you are adding, are these CCS or these NACS, the Tesla standard?
Yeah, so we are, the short answer is yes, we are looking to add charging to the gas stations, to the stations, and we're doing that in a prioritized manner, depending on which markets, you know, because you're building all the sites in one go is kind of not feasible. So you've got to prioritize where the density is, what we are learning from the likes of Uber and Hertz around driver behaviors, where they need the charging, and then prioritizing locations sort of accordingly. In terms of CCS versus NACS, we think both will coexist for a while, to be very honest, because there are cars on the road today that take CCS and are still being sold with CCS technology on them. On the flip side, we also think that NACS will scale over time, which is why we announced, I think it was in October of last year, a deal to buy about $100 million worth of Tesla superchargers, which we will also be placing in coexistence on our site. So it goes back to the point someone was making earlier about choice. Consumers will have different vehicles on the road. They'll need and want the choice. There are some technical aspects of the choice as well between Tesla and CCS that matter around the voltage, speed of charging, etc. So we intend to give consumers that choice with both sets of solutions.
The amount of investment that you're making in adding these stations, is the goal to have all the BP existing gas stations add EV chargers? I would imagine that would be the easiest path and the quickest path to just get EV charging accessible to every driver. But are there obstacles in terms of adding EV chargers to existing stations? Is it easier to build a new, like a Giga Hub, versus just adding EV stations?
Well, I'd say the answer to that is it depends. It depends. You know, not every gas station is as big. It's not everyone has power easily available to it. Not everyone has a permitting authority that's maybe as open-minded about it, or wants to take time. So that's why we have to prioritize. We've got to look at where the real estate is available, where the power is available, where the permits can come, and where the customers are. So we take all of those into consideration, and that's how we will build out.
Apologies. Last follow-up.
Yeah.
Last question.
Yeah.
So with the gas stations that you're prioritizing, is BP incenting the stations knowing that they might lose some revenue to the real estate in the short term because the charging times right now are a little longer than it would be to then just fill your tank with gas? Maybe that car needs to sit there 15 minutes and they have more than enough time. You know, it's just more time than they would need in and out. But would BP be making an investment in existing stations to understand that in the long term, this will be a 5-minute stop or a 3-minute stop, the same amount of charging time as it is to fill your tank? My big question is, I don't understand why every gas station in America doesn't just add an EV charger, and then that would solve the problem of range and charging anxiety. So would like to hear your leadership in that space.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of considerations there. You know, why doesn't every gas station add one? Maybe because there's not enough EV drivers around it, for example, at the moment, and they don't see enough demand for it. But, you know, the reality is, for example, we see this, that the EV drivers that do come in, they spend more, for example, on convenience. You know, so they go into Debbie's stores, they will buy more because they're around there for longer. It may be because, frankly, in certain cases, people may still be the store owners, the gas station owners themselves, may be settling, in their mind, what they think of EVs. Everyone has an opinion and how they want to go about it. So it's really, it's not a straightforward answer, I guess. It's not as straightforward as just build it and they will come. In some cases, you will build and they will come. In other cases, I think folks want to take a more conservative approach. And it's about, again, these are all businesses. Our marketeer partners, for example, are individual entrepreneurs. And sometimes they want to make their own, have their own thoughts around this and take their own time to make a decision.
Thank you so much for your questions.
I'm so sorry.
Going to be available after.
Are you being supported by the Inflation Reduction Act? Are you getting any funding to help you with your investment?
Okay, we can talk later.
Thank you so much. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, Francesco Wall with Tesla. So I know the panel is about fast charging, but I'm curious. We've heard that there are a lot of challenges with getting any type of charging at an airport, whether that's level 2 charging or fast charging. And I know that's something that obviously Hertz and Uber drivers have to think about. So I'm curious what you have ideas you have there of how to address that issue. What some potential opportunities are moving forward.
Great question. Do you want to?
Yeah, absolutely. I can take that. So we have, when I spoke earlier about some of the learnings that we've done over the course of, the past 2 years, The amount of learning that we have entered into in utilities and permitting and power grids and upgrading all of these infrastructures has been immense. And we have now built so many different level three charging stations powered by Tesla at our airport facilities, to the point where the top 60 airports across the country, there's only a few left that don't have charging infrastructure there internally for our operation to use. We've been able to put in level two chargers and level three chargers, the DC fast chargers, in our facilities. So we have learned a lot through the process. As Sujay said, it takes time. I think that was part of being a first mover in this space, and one of the advantages that we did have was securing that power from the utility companies right away, and we were able to truly build on that. So it has been something that we're extremely proud of, because a lot of work went into that, a lot of money was spent, and we feel like we're well positioned for the future now because of that.
And I think the next step is going to be able to have more publicly available charging infrastructures across airport infrastructure. And this is why I just make the fervent call for public-private partnerships. As you may know, many airports are owned by the local or state governments, and it does take a long cycle of collaboration across governments to be able to create permitting, to even help the official sort of see the future as it could be, and then help them make the trade-offs within their priorities in order to make it happen. And then you have to start building it.
Yeah, I think what you really need is something like in Asia, we call it a single window clearance, which is you put your application in somewhere, it comes out the other side with a utility and a permit on the other side, rather than right now, which is you go to a utility and then you chase them to a conclusion. You go to a permitting authority and you chase them to conclusion. And that's just not expedient, and it takes a lot of time. And then I agree with you, Camille, completely, that airport, the natural solution should be, like, why not just put it, you've got a parking garage right there on the airport, put it in. But it is extremely difficult to engage with and have those conversations, have expedient conversations, because for whatever reason, maybe they don't want to seem biased or pick a party or whatever it is, and so therefore it takes a long time for them to work through their internal processes and protocols. And so therefore, that's exactly why we are working with like Hertz, who has properties that are just off the airport, but we know that by collaborating between two private entities at the moment, we are able to at least move faster to get fast charging in, so that we can make it publicly accessible, which is what we're doing to all drivers.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Hi, Devin Gladden with AAA. I want to talk about safety and security. So I'm curious, you know, when you have all of these EV battery fires that emergency responders are really struggling to deal with, I'm curious, how are you all thinking about safety from a renter's perspective or driver's perspective? And then for security, when you're installing these new stations that require an enormous amount of electricity, what are you doing to secure them to make sure that they don't become targets?
You want me to go first?
I can start with that. We've actually partnered with various fire agencies from across. Recently, off the top of my head, we just worked with the city of Baltimore, and their fire chief came over and really worked with our local operations team and the permitting department and the airport at Baltimore to ensure that what we were doing would meet the requirements that not only we had from a safety perspective, which are extreme, but then also for themselves, right? They can learn how if something were to happen, to best handle those situations. So I would say, from a safety perspective and a fire perspective, to your point, partnering with our local agencies, because every location is so different, is going to be extremely important moving forward. But we take it extremely seriously, and there's a full program dedicated to that.
Yeah, I would tell you that so for us, you know, especially at the gas stations, whether it's the TA stations or the smaller gas stations in cities, et cetera, I mean, they are manned and folks are extremely well drilled on safety. I mean, Debbie spends a lot of her time with her teams, and my team spends a lot of time with her teams on education. They are well-drilled and knowing what to do from a safety perspective. Now, will it always work? We have to see, you know, touch wood, we haven't had a fire yet here. But I think the other point, just building on what Carrie was saying, you know, again, you've got to look at, we in the U.S. need to look outside at markets in Europe and in Asia where there's more penetration. There's been perhaps more fires to learn from that and bring that education here. So to give you an example, in China, where you know there is a high density of EVs in some of the southern cities, the fire departments, maybe from experience now, because having dealt with them, know exactly what to do. They'll come in. It's kind of interesting to watch. They'll come in. They'll turn the vehicle on the side. They'll carve the battery out. They'll put it into a bin that's carrying water, and they'll sort of let it sort of burn through in that. But they do all of that process sort of in 15, 20 minutes. They're extremely quick about it because they know how to do it. So what does that mean for us here? I think we, like folks like ourselves, like Hertz, Uber, others, we need to work with fire departments, and we are working with fire departments to inform them, train them. And again, you need a willing counterparty on the other side, but that's what needs to happen to learn from other experiences. There's been enough other experiences that we can learn from. So it's training staff on site, it's training the fire departments, and it's educating the driver as well, frankly, on what to do if something like this goes on or happens.
I think education is also just a critical component, if I can overemphasize that. And listen, AAA, let's talk.
I think that's right.
If there's expertise that you all can bring from a safety standpoint, I think all across all of these partnerships,
yeah,
we would
absolutely
love to be able to have you at the table, because ultimately our objective is to just transition the whole world into this new electrified, decarbonized driving grid. And doing so will require not just making it easier, simpler, faster, but also safer.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for your input so far. Loving the conversation. My question is focused on Rivian, who, you know, they paused production the other day in their Georgia plant. So I'm just curious how a decision like that would impact your own decision making. Is that something you guys take seriously? Is it just a blip on the radar? Just how does news like that kind of inhibit or hurt or help your plants?
Listen, we're at an innovation convention right now, and the nature of innovation is stops and starts. And, you know, I don't know if anyone has ever seen the documentary, What Happened to the Electric Car? I recommend it. It demonstrates how we are on a journey that is upwards of 50 years in the making. And we still feel like we're very much at the beginning of it. So I don't know the details of what has happened with Rivian. However, what I do know is that the nature of sort of a new world-changing frontier is that you'll have stops and starts. And on the other side of it, I think we're going to achieve the vision that we all have stood on.
Yeah, I think if you just, you know, 5 or 7 years ago, if you asked someone about EVs, they would have probably said, well, you know, I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe it's a niche thing. But I think we see it now, all of us, that EVs are here to stay. It's a question of, you know, how fast do they scale? And how does that grow? And we are all learning in the process. We are all learning, and we'll all change with it and make it better. Sorry, go ahead with your question. Otherwise, I'll keep going.
All right. With the rollout of EV trucks, what are your plans to support consumers who are towing vehicles?
Consumers who are towing vehicles.
Yeah.
Do you want to take that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So actually, we were talking about it at breakfast this morning. So as we are moving faster with what would typically be a motorist recharging facility, as more and more manufacturers are now bringing out larger vehicles that have the ability to tow, or even a large heavy-duty vehicle that is EV that needs another 10 miles of charge to get back to their depot where their overnight charging is, we're actually reconfiguring and looking at how we can set up what would typically be a motorist recharging experience, so there is pull-through lanes.
Okay.
So that there is, in my case, we will have dedicated space where that driver could drop their trailer so they could come in where the smaller vehicles are. Or if there were a truck towing with a fifth wheel, they could come through.
Right,
making
right.
sure they're a little bit wider. So we are actually seeing how can we meet everybody's needs as we all learn what's required, but also balance that piece around how do I optimize my site? How do I put the right technology in, knowing that it will change? We are in a new frontier here. So I want to make sure I get the use of the technology I have now, but I have space to put the new in when it comes to.
Yeah.
So that's the balance we're playing, but it's a really great question and one where...
Yeah, and I'm thinking about getting an EV to tow a horse trailer, so
exactly.
I'm not going to be dropping it.
No, and so that's why we would make sure in that case, because I was thinking the big 18-wheeler truck. Yeah. I don't think you've got that many horses.
Yeah, because I think sometimes she's got 18-wheeler trucks that are coming through. I mean, you know, that need a top-up charge. What do you do? But for like a Ford F-150 Lightning was towing something, we are working on pull-through lanes.
Okay.
So I'm from the UK, and I've had a series of electric cars over the last 10 years. And I was thinking about it. I think I can count on two hands the number of times I've been to a public charger, because I just charge at home. And what's the current situation in America with home charging? Because cars are going to have better and better ranges, right? The next two or three years, we're going to be seeing 500 miles per charge or whatever it's going to be. I mean, how often are you going to need to charge in a public charging when you've got one at home?
It's a good question. So for people who have homes, single-family homes, and own their property, I think home charging is going to lead the way. However, in many cities, you actually have people who live in multifamily homes, apartment buildings, etc., and they are experiencing their own charging journey as we are here. I think Sujay was just mentioning that apartment building, or maybe it was Carrie, people who own apartment buildings are thinking through how it impacts their own balance sheets to add chargers in those areas. So because so much of the U.S. population is living in these multifamily dwellings, apartment buildings, condo buildings, etc., there will always be a role for public charging. And then there's also the road trip, which is a bit of an American phenomenon as well, where, you know, you can get from one side to the other in the U.K. and the time that it takes to get from probably Austin to Houston. But in the U.S., people are taking trips that are quite farther, which puts a really important role in place for public charging. Thank you. I think we have time for one more question.
I'll try to be quick. Tyler Elwood with Adobe. You're all customers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've heard you talk about the infrastructure build out and the customer experience on location. Could you talk a little bit about customer engagement and what your strategy is? Because in the course of this conversation, we're hearing a lot about ebbs and flows and changes, and customers are so finicky these days. How do you think you'll handle that?
From the rental car standpoint, we talked a lot about education, and it starts at the moment you're booking the reservation. So from the time you go online to book your reservation, we are showcasing that trip planner right there and then. And then from there, when you book the reservation, we're sending you a confirmation email. And in that email has about three different links to it. And some of those are the how-to videos, the quick tips and tricks, the fact that, hey, newsflash, you just rented an EV. Want to make sure that you know that, right? And just kind of really making sure that we're hitting the education front at the very, very beginning of the process. Then when they arrive on site, ensuring that they have somebody there and our team is educated to support them in the journey. So really, you know, we have our EV content hubs at our locations to where they can go and talk to somebody. We have ambassadors out there walking the lines to make sure that folks know what they're getting into, where to charge it. If it's in a Tesla product, we're showing them the on-screen navigation there. If it's in a different product, we're providing them different apps that would provide aggregators to visit different places that you can charge and things of that nature. Really just focusing on the education side of things and working with them all the way through the process. And then once they leave our facility, on the other side of it, we've got great partners like AAA and things like that that go out and help us with the roadside. But we also have our own team that handles those calls, and we're walking them through the steps as they get stuck through their journey. I'm not quite sure where to go or how to do this or where, you know, why all of a sudden can I not get the windshield wipers on? It doesn't matter how simple it is or how complicated it is. We have a team of people that are there to support them and help them through it.
Thank you. Awesome. In our last minute, we can do a rapid fire sort of final comments from everyone on the panel. I'll go ahead and start, and then we can go down the line and end with Sujay. From Uber's standpoint, our message is clear. It's time to speed up, not slow down, on the EV transition in general, leading with charging, because that is one of the biggest barriers. And doing that speed up is just going to require partnership across companies like ours and across cities. And we know that it's the right thing to do. We know it's the value creating thing to do. And we're really excited for how we will accelerate in the coming years, starting with what I'm bringing to the table, that $800 million investment.
So for Hertz, I think the biggest piece is this is an ever-changing mobility landscape, and we are just so excited to be able to provide the customer base out there and the consumer any option they can think of, right? We want to make sure that everyone has choice, and we want to make sure that you feel comfortable in the choice that you're making with us. So we will continue to offer the EV product to our customers. We're going to continue to partner with my friend over here at Uber and our friends at BP to provide the rideshare drivers an entry-level option to get in and really have the ability to rent something that they might not be able to purchase on their own. We're going to provide that charging infrastructure for the general public and our customer base. And we're going to partner with our cities and communities and fire departments and, you know, different county officials to make sure that we are supporting the communities in which we do business, because that's just extremely important.
And Travel Centers of America, for us, it's the focus is getting some infrastructure down on the ground so that we can start to learn. We can understand the drivers, excuse the pun, but the drivers and what they need, so that we can provide the best experience both before the decision is made for charging, but while they're charging as well, and being part of that wider ecosystem. That's, to me, is the key piece. We can do a whole lot at our individual site, but the driver needs to be part of a larger ecosystem for this whole thing to work. So it's working with fantastic folks on my left and my right, because we all have pieces of the puzzle and we will all learn and iterate together as we move through this.
So. Yeah, I think to Camille's point, partnership, keyword, this industry is not going to get built in isolation. Partnerships are going to be very important for BP Pulse with folks like on this stage to grow our presence in this industry. Come, you should see our charge points show up across the U.S., very soon, so come visit us, and while you're there, buy some Cokes and Kit Kats from Debbie's stores. We look forward to welcoming you as our guests. Thank you very much.